Welcome to The Geek in Review, the podcast focused on innovative and creative ideas in the legal profession. I'm Greg Lambert, and I will be running this one solo as Marlene had some things pop up that caused her not to be able to attend this, and she sends her apologies to everyone. But on this week's episode, we are very, very happy to talk with two of the fellows from the LexisNexis African Ancestry Network and LexisNexis Rule of Law Foundation Fellowship 2023 cohort. We have Whitney Triplett, is a 3L at Southern University Law Center and co-author of the paper Technology Solutions to Alleviate Jury Bias. Whitney, great to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me, Greg.
And we also have Paul Campbell, who is a fourth year of his part-time studies at the University of the District of Columbia, David A. Clark School of Law, and co-authored the paper, Law Clinic Support Tools and Resources to Combat Systemic Racism in the Legal System. Paul, thanks for being here as well.
Thank you for having me, sir.
And we are also thrilled to have Adonica Black, the Director of Global Diversity and Inclusion for LexisNexis Legal and Professional. And she is also the Director of LexisNexis African Ancestry Network and LexisNexis Rule of Law Foundation Fellowship. So, wow, you get like three jobs, right?
There's a few in there.
Well, that's good. I'm sure you get three salaries as well. So,
of course. Yeah.
So, well, thank you, Adonica, for being here as well.
Thanks for having me, Greg. Happy to be here.
All right. So, Adonica, a couple of years ago, we had Rhonda Baisley Moore from LexisNexis about the previous 2022 report, where fellows from the Historically Black College and Universities, or HBCUs, law schools were given one very, very complex task, and that was to uncover how LexisNexis products could be used to address and eliminate systemic racism in the legal system. So can you tell us a little bit about what the goal was for the 2023 report and fellowship program?
Absolutely. So just as you said, we have had three cohorts now of fellows since we started the fellowship in 2021. And so in that time, we've had 45 fellows as of the end of this year's cohort. And in the first 2 years, we had fellows working on individual projects that we asked them to propose a solution using LexisNexis's legal technology and our amazing talent to tackle systemic racism and systemic inequities in our legal system. And after 2 years, we had about 30 projects, and we sat back and recognized that we were at a point where we needed to really dive deeper into where we could drive impact. So with our third cohort, we adjusted the model to have a project-based approach with teams. And we had 15 fellows this year on 5 teams, 3 each, and had them really focus on a specific area that we, after reviewing those previous years, identified that we could actually do something about. And the unifying theme between those projects were the marrying of technology and their legal acumen to really impact issues within the legal system positively and advance equity. So we had our 15 fellows this year working on those 5 projects. And I'll just give you a quick overview of what they were. Yeah. I like to call them kind of cradle to grave issues that you encounter in the legal system, because we truly start from youth. Our first project, called the Gavel League, is a mobile application. And their project is focused on developing a mobile app that's been gamified to increase literacy and comprehension of critical rule of law concepts for youth and for children, and also for their parents and their guardians, to help them understand kind of what are the rights, what rights your children have. And in our research, we uncovered that the lack of representation of legal profession really starts from youth and from maybe sometimes having a negative impression or a negative association with the legal system. So we're trying to correct that from the beginning. And then moving forward to our next project, is I2Sing America, Uncovering Untold U.S. History Through the Law. And that particular project is focused on creating an accessible repository of inclusive curriculum resources for law school instruction. So once you actually become interested in the law, you go into law school, what are you actually going to learn in law school? And that project is focused on making the curriculum more culturally competent so that all lawyers, not just a specific background, can really zealously advocate for all of their clients. And then the third project, once you've left law school, now you got to think about being in the profession. So that is our Pathways to Practice pipeline, building bridges specifically for HBCU students to legal fields that lack diversity. And that project is focused on three arms of the profession, the judicial clerkship, corporate counsel, and big law representation of diversity in the profession. So providing resources to help underrepresented attorneys be successful and become leaders in the profession themselves. And we've got our fourth project that's technology solutions to alleviate racial bias in jury selection, which Whitney's going to tell us all about. But just very quickly, focus on our right to a representative jury in our legal system. And then our fifth project is our law clinic support tools and resources to combat systemic racism in the legal system, which Paul will tell us about. And that really is about how people access justice in our country. Many people don't have access to justice but through a legal clinic. So focused on how to make those legal clinics more effective. So that really is the kind of cradle to grave approach we're taking and thinking about how do we incrementally impact the legal system.
Yeah, that sounds like a great way to organize a very complex topic. Before we dive into the individual papers with Paul and Whitney, I'm assuming, and if I remember right from looking at your co-authors, they were at other HBCUs as well. So this was a remote type project. How did you find that? Did you find that you made new friendships and relationships with folks at other schools? Whitney, I'll ask you that one.
We utilized, it was kind of a hybrid thing. So we started online and we were able to meet in person twice. Nice. But the structure of it, it did allow us to be able to meet new friends. Funny story, really quickly, Favor, one of the young ladies on my team, she and I had just attended the Miss JD conference in Washington maybe a month or so before that. So, you know, we had saw each other online and when we met as a group. And when we finally met in the airport, I'm like, wow, I know you from somewhere. She was like, well, yeah, you know, we're in LexisNexis together. And she was like, I remember you from Miss JD. So, it was really fun getting to connect with people in other regions.
And Paul, how was your experience?
Same, wonderful, you know, meeting other students from throughout the country and learning about their experiences and their plans and all the wonderful things that they're doing with their different clerkships and internships.
Good, good. Well, the collaboration, especially the remote and being able to make it a hybrid situation, probably much better than the two previous cohorts, I think, who may have had to do everything online, if I recall right.
Well, in the first year, we did get a chance to get together because that was at the end of 2021, and it was a very controlled, everyone tested for it, kind of very small gathering. And then in 2022, we did have a larger gathering, which was nice to actually see each other in real life. But this year, like Whitney said, we got a chance to see each other twice. So that was really awesome. Nice because you just build on those bonds. And we did fun things, too. Like we did the mission of the fellowship, in addition to advancing the rule of law, is developing our fellows and making sure that they're really well prepared to be legal professionals. So a big part of the legal profession, in addition to your education, are, you know, kind of your social skills and business acumen. So we took our fellows through a golf clinic. We did a wine tasting where they learned kind of how do you do a business dinner with a client. So we did some fun things too, which was great.
Awesome. Good. It's nice to have a well-rounded experience like that. So, well, I want to go through both of your papers and just kind of talk about some of the highlights of that. And Paul, I'm gonna start with you, but I'm gonna encourage Whitney and Adonica to, you know, if you've got some comments, please feel free to jump in. So, Paul, your paper focused on the law clinic phase. I think it was the fifth phase or fifth part of this, and it was on support tools and resources to combat systemic racism in the legal system. During your research on this, what do you believe are the most critical steps needed for this reform?
That's a great question. I definitely think that additional funding and resources for legal clinics will be the most critical steps, because those actions will allow more low-income people to receive the legal services that they need. So many people are turned away or they're only given limited services because of the clinical resources. So sometimes the resources are human, but sometimes they're found in other sources, such as AI tools, which will allow clinics to be more efficient. So, for example, I'm currently a student attorney, and a significant portion of my time during intake days is spent getting personal information from the clients. And when you have AI tools that can extract that information quicker, then it will allow student attorneys such as myself or clinical supervisors to spend more time focusing on legal analysis and providing other services.
Yeah. So were there any, I know they had that tool there, and that's something that I think affects pretty much all legal practices, whether you're solo or in a large firm or even in government, is that, you know, almost clerical type information where you're having to take that same information and put it in multiple places is something that hopefully we can get the technology to advance. But so let me ask you, how do you see the role of legal education evolving to better prepare future lawyers for addressing issues of equity and justice? So what's kind of been your experience?
Well, I noticed that more law schools are offering classes which are geared towards people who are interested in making our society a more perfect union. You know, many battles that affect equity and justice in our country are fought in the courts. And I think law schools will continue to create people who will sacrifice for the greater good. The ABA requirement for experiential learning is very helpful. And so it doesn't require clinical participation, but many law students are choosing to participate in legal clinics. So I think in addition to those requirements, just the curriculum expansion so that people can learn about history, trailblazers, as well as the current conditions which impact many people in our country.
Well said. Well said. So can you share any of the personal experiences on, you know, on the work that you've done that may have shaped or your own experiences that has shaped your view on equity in the legal system?
Well, I think we have a great legal system, one of the best in the world, but it's not perfect, especially regarding the way that some, such as African Americans like myself, are treated sometimes. But I was deeply influenced by Thurgood Marshall, and he showed me that we can take action to improve the legal system and create a better tomorrow.
Awesome. That's, he's my hero too. So, what's the future look like for you? What kind of career aspirations do you have either within or outside the legal industry?
Well, I hope to pass the Florida bar and practice real estate law. And I'm also in the Army Reserve, so I hope to, you know, stick with it and retire. Right now I'm a signal officer, so I hope to switch to become a JAG officer.
Awesome. Awesome. So I'm an old enlisted guy from the 80s. So We had different colored uniforms back then.
Back on the military. So thank you for your service, sir.
Thank you. Oh, all right. Well, Whitney, let's turn to you now. And your contribution to the report was you researched and discussed technology solutions to alleviate racial bias in jury selection. And I think a lot of us don't really kind of think about that. So, you know, could you elaborate a little bit more on the key strategies and solutions that can be implemented to achieve in this that you found in your report?
Certainly. So like you said, a lot of people don't realize the intricacies that jury selection and that whole process entail. So just briefly, the jury pool is selected randomly using, you know, whatever your jurisdiction has decided is going to be their source. So they pull those names and randomly, so to speak, people receive summons. And once you receive that summons, you come in and you go through an interview or voir dire, and certain jurors are kept, certain jurors are excluded. And the law allows, in most jurisdictions, it allows a certain amount of people to be dismissed for no reason at all. The attorney or the prosecutor has, you know, no obligation to tell why they are sending this person away, but it cannot be based on race in particular, which is what we focused on. And in a lot of areas, people are being dismissed because of their race. So our project wanted to determine how we could help people to, one, realize their implicit biases that are causing some of these strikes, because we like to believe that people have good intentions when, you know, serving in the Justice Department. We like to believe that some of these are not necessarily intentional choices. So one, we wanted to look at the implicit bias, and two, we wanted to see what could LexisNexis provide that would help to check those biases. So we were able to come up with, or further, because the cohort last year started it, so we were able to further a jury selection dashboard. And what it does, it allows you to see what a jury should look like or what the composition should look like based on the demographics of that particular jurisdiction. So it's a guide.
Hmm. Is the guide directed toward the attorneys in voir dire, or is it the judge? Who would be the best to receive this information?
So it's multi-purpose, and it is suited for all practitioners, whether you're the judge and someone is challenging a strike that the opposition has made, and you want to see, you know, what are your range of, okay, should I let this person be dismissed, or can the numbers not support dismissing this person? So it does provide help for the judge, but it also provides like a checking system for attorneys and for prosecutors, because, you know, based on the jurisdiction, I should have a certain amount of this race, a certain amount of the next race, and a certain amount of this race to make up what we call a fair cross section. So it's really able, you know, to assist everybody that's in that process.
Okay. What do you think are some of the biggest challenges that you've identified in your research when it comes to trying to ensure this racial equality within the legal system, especially within jury selection?
The biggest problem is definitely systematic. The law allows, like I said, a person to be removed from the prospective jury. So it's really hard to want someone or a group of people to follow a kind of undefined law, because the Constitution doesn't say that, you know, word for word or verbatim, that a jury has to look like the community looks. But case law tells us that it does. So, you know, case law is not always as strong as what the Constitution says. So it's arguable that this is not even a requirement. So getting people to adhere to moral values versus necessarily the black letter law is the most difficult. And then in addition to that, and to compound that problem, you want your client to win. So You want to make choices that are going to be beneficial to your client. And even if those choices sometimes push that envelope of what should be morally acceptable.
Yeah, I can see that's going to be a large obstacle. So how do you plan to continue making this type of positive impact in advancing the rule of law once you graduate?
I plan to continue taking opportunities such as the LexisNexis Rule of Law Foundation and the African Ancestry Network Fellowship that was provided, and just learn as much as I can, and just to be a tool to my community wherever I'm needed, wherever I can pitch in and I see there's a problem and I'm capable of providing a solution, just to have that availability.
All right. Well, thanks both of you for taking the time and making the effort and contributing to the report. I think this is something that everyone can take a look at and learn from. So, Adonica, I want to come back to you. And so from your perspective at LexisNexis, what role do you think that analytics can play in identifying and addressing some of the disparities in the legal system? Because I think once people kind of see the numbers, it can make it real for people.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there, Greg. At our organization, we are absolutely focused on bringing reliable artificial intelligence, including analytics, generative AI, visualization, data analytics, all kinds of technology to the legal community. And one of the things I've really been thinking about is, what does inclusion and diversity have to do with this wave of technology? And one of the things that keeps standing out to me is this technology is perfectly imperfect, right? So whatever you put into it is exactly what you're going to get out of it every time, which I think is amazing, but also can be scary if you don't put the right things into it, right? So to your question about what role can data analytics and technology play in this, I think that if we are able to put the right inputs into this technology to recognize bias, one, that means we have to accept that biases do exist, and then make sure that we have diverse data sets, that we are capturing a full breadth of experiences, and then through that, utilize this technology to uncover that data, recognize those patterns, and really help us understand why and what is so similar when these issues occur over time through our data analytics. And I think we have an amazing opportunity here to do that, because the technology, again, is perfectly imperfect. So it will perfectly recognize these patterns that sometimes humans may miss or avoid if we set it to do that.
Okay.
So well, I think that there's this amazing precipice that we could do something about.
And Whitney and Paul, I want to follow up with you guys on this and drag you into the analytics issue, because I'm sure that in your research that, one, you were able to access some of the analytics that were provided with the tools that were given to you. And also, I'm assuming here, but also you may have been given some guidance from people on how to use the analytics and approach it into your research. So Whitney, let me ask you, is that how did that help kind of back up the things that you were finding with some actual statistics?
So we were fortunate enough to be able to administer a survey, and that survey allowed us to gather real-time and current sentiment on how people feel about the judicial process. And one that allowed us to have a foundation and to establish, statistically that there is a problem. We're not making up this problem. It's not fabricated. This is what the public says, and this is what we notice. These are the reasons for it. So having those numbers, one, it supports our purpose. It supports the work that we're doing. And also, as Adonica said, what you put into the system is what you get out of it. So we were afforded the ability to go through with data specialists, to go through the numbers that we collected, and to be able to say, okay, we asked this question this way, but the way we asked this question could have been biased. So let's change it to reflect, what we really meant, so that we can get a more accurate showing. So looking at the numbers and applying them to the problem, it provides a better source for the data that we're going to input into these artificial intelligence systems to make sure that we are not adding our own biases to the data set.
Interesting. Yeah, surveys are a unique animal and have to be viewed in certain ways. That's why there's professionals that do those. So, Paul, what about you? What kind of analytics experience did you have in your research?
Yeah, so we had great mentors. Mr. Kidd, you know, he's a big statistics guy. And we did a survey as well of the clinicians throughout the country. So we were able to find out what is it that these legal clinics need. And that can help us to build a business case to LexisNexis and other stakeholders about how we can continue to improve the lives of poor and low-income people throughout the country. So not only did we do research and talk to other humans, but we were able to consult sources which talked about, you know, how much legal services typically cost, how many people are, you know, turned away when they seek legal services. And all of those things could allow us to document our findings, but even provide recommendations to the next group of fellows so they can investigate, like, well, some of the top elite universities in our country that have legal clinics such as Harvard or Georgetown, what are they doing? And how can we learn from those schools and use some of those tools and techniques in some of the HBCUs, which historically haven't had the same amount of resources? And we also found out about, you know, some of the HBCU law schools closing down. Like, I never knew that happened before this research. So it also inspired me to be like Miss Mary McLeod Bethune. Like, how can I do something so that when I'm dead and gone, make an impact so that more young people, especially Black people who want to be attorneys, can get that opportunity to do so?
Well, Adonica, I want to give you a chance to kind of do some bragging on the fellows and the fellowship program. So what do you think kind of, what are some of the highlights and that result from this type of fellowship? And is there some other things that LexisNexis is doing that people should know about?
Yeah. I could talk about this forever, right? I'm sure you noticed me just like smiling and nodding with Whitney and Paul, because I'm so proud of them and so thoroughly impressed by the work that they're doing, and just the thoughtfulness and with which they approach their projects. And I think that's true of all of our fellows. All of our fellows come from very unique backgrounds themselves, right? So not only are they maybe overtly diverse in terms of maybe race or ethnicity, but also we've got a range of ages. We've got a range of statuses, from Paul to me in the military, to some of our fellows being parents, to some being part-time students, some being full-time employees at other places. And they're all unified around this concept of doing something in our legal system. So I just think that's amazing in and of itself. And we talk about this mantra in our fellowship program called "That Was Then, This Is Now." And it's something that we use as a motivating call for our fellows, because it's also a professional development experience for them. So we've asked them to do some heroic things. We've asked them to do some public speaking in front of hundreds of people. We've asked them to draft a published report. We've asked them to do some significant things that I think for any attorney or aspiring attorney, it may be challenging. And we really rally them with the, you know, "That Was Then," in terms of, you thought maybe you couldn't do this, and with the time, with the effort, with the support you've gotten, this is now, and you have done it. And I think that is true of how we are approaching inclusion and diversity as a business as well. We really are thinking very strategically about "That Was Then" in terms of issues that we've identified within our own talent community and the external communities within which we serve. And then with applied focus, professional development, mentorship, sponsorship, really making sure that all of our talent feels well supported and championing that sense of inclusion and belonging so that everyone feels committed on this is now, right? So we get to a point where we're now seeing some of the fruits of that labor, and we are seeing people succeeding in their careers, developing professionally. We're seeing leaders understanding what it means to contribute and lead an inclusive culture, and then supporting it and wanting to champion that because they recognize the value for themselves and the business. So there's a lot that we're doing in this space, and I'm really, again, just very proud of the work that is happening, but I recognize that we're on a journey and we are continuing the journey.
Excellent. Well, I love the concept of that was then, this is now, and how you're applying it. And this is now, you get two of your fellows here on a podcast that will yeah. listen to by,
a big podcast.
By hopefully hundreds and hundreds of people. So, what do you see for the fellowship program and initiatives going into the future, Danica?
Yeah, so two things that I think we're looking forward to in the upcoming year that are exciting to me. One, we are a global organization, so we really want to make sure that we are globally supporting equity in our legal systems across the world. So we are launching a South African chapter of our fellowship program. We've just launched it on Thursday of Thanksgiving, actually, because it's not a holiday there. So
not
we
a
had
holiday
a chance
there.
To do a launch with our partners there, and we're really excited to be able to grow the mission in that way, and hoping to continue to expand across our global communities that we work with and serve. And in terms of impact, we are also evolving to include, in addition to law school students that have, or graduates that have a STEM background, because one of the things that our fellows have helped us to understand in their reports is that these tech solutions are really viable. And so we need people to help us build the technology. We have a lot of prototype work from what our fellows have established, and we are looking to incorporate students that have a background in STEM that can do the software development, do the data analytics, do the data science and user experience research, and help us actually develop some of these solutions.
That's fun. Yeah, I'm excited about the South African cohorts that you're creating. I had a chance a few years ago to go to the Supreme Court in Pretoria, South Africa, and present, and it was really, really enjoyable. What a wonderful place. So
we're partnering with the International Association of Women Judges, South Africa chapter, for the program launch there, and it's amazing just to see their commitment and as a nation, how much they emphasize justice. So looking forward to that. Yeah.
Well, if you need a podcaster to go down to South Africa,
just
let me know. I'd love
we
to
can take it on the road.
The unfortunateness of being able to do podcasts remotely. So right now we're at the part of the show where we ask our crystal ball question. And that is really... what we want you to do is pull out your crystal ball and peer into the future for us. So I'll start with Whitney. You know, what do you see on the horizon for the next, say, 2 to 5 years that you hope your work with the fellowship and work on this report will help change or maybe even challenge in the legal industry?
My project really hit close to home. I'm from Louisiana. And as I'm sure you know, Louisiana has been one of the very last states to outlaw non-unanimous jury decisions for criminal convictions. So I am very much interested in continuing that momentum and working to, you know, ultimately, I would like to see peremptory strikes with more definitive boundaries. So I definitely see myself working in that field for the next few years.
We'll keep writing on it and keep fighting on it. So that's
thank you.
And Paul, how about you? What do you think your report will change or challenge in the industry?
I definitely think it will bring awareness to legal clinics. You know, me personally, I donated to University of Miami General Clinic Fund, as well as Rising for Justice, because as a student attorney, you know, I was able to see firsthand how we as the legal clinic don't have the same resources as some of the other entities that are on the other side of the table. So I think LexisNexis, who has made a commitment already to have a clinical page on their website, will continue to improve it and continue to offer services to these legal clinics. And more individuals will hopefully volunteer their time and money to continue to serve the low-income populations throughout our country.
Nice, nice. So, and Donica, I'll since you didn't write the report, let me, although you wrote a great introduction to it, you know, pull out your crystal ball, and what do you see more generally for the legal industry in the next few years when it comes to dealing with issues of bias and systemic racism?
Yeah, I guess I'm biased in the sense that I'm really hopeful, honestly. I think that this program, in addition to just the general legal community discussion, has truly evolved. I'm also an attorney, and I haven't really seen this level of people being aware and culturally competent enough to discuss these issues before. And I think AI actually and technology, the advent of technology, has really helped us kind of leapfrog to where we need to be having these conversations and really evaluating and auditing our systems to make sure that the future of our systems are more equitable. So I am really excited about that. And I'm very hopeful that we will continue to see more of that. And I will also want to just quickly recognize that I'm already seeing that we have great partners in this program. We have a law firm that has sponsored us, Reed Smith. We have partnered with the National Bar Association and the Historically Black Colleges and Law School Consortium. And I see it coming up in all of their conversations. All of their conversations are talking about this equitability in the law and how it intersects with technology. So I'm hopeful that that will continue.
Great, great. Well, I'm inspired by the inspiration that you guys have given all of us, both through your report and through the work that you're doing and will be doing. So, Whitney Triplett and Paul Campbell, thank you very much. And we're going to put a link to your report so that people can get access to that. And Donica Black, thank you for pulling us all together and helping the students getting the ability to, one, use the resources that are out there, but to also have the guidance to create this report. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Greg.
All right.
Thank you
so much. Oh, you're welcome. All right. And of course, thanks to everyone, to all of our listeners for taking the time to listen to the Geek and Review podcast. If you enjoy the show, please share it with a colleague, especially this episode. We'd love to hear from you. So you can reach out to Marlene and me on LinkedIn, and Marlene's on X at Gay Bauer M, and I'm on X at Glambert. Donica, let me ask you, where's the preferred place for people to find you online?
I'm on LinkedIn, post all the time, Donica Black.
All right. And Whitney, how about you?
The same. I'm on LinkedIn as well. My first and last name, Whitney Triplett.
All right. And Paul?
I'm like totally off the grid, but you can send me an email at paul.campbell@udc.edu.
All right. All right. Hey, email is still a legitimate way to converse. So, all right. Well, thank you all once again for being here.
Thank you.
Right. And as always, the music you hear is from our friend Jerry David DeSica. Thanks, Jerry. All right. Thanks again, everybody. Bye-bye.
Hey, hey. back.